What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Each week, Politalk dives straight into the tough questions. Like what happens if a World War II shipwreck ruptures and unleashes thousands of liters of oil into our ocean?
Across the Pacific, there's around 3,800 of these World War II shipwrecks which are potentially polluting.
To listen, search Politalk in your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Ubongya Diana Ali and good fellow morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia, coming to you from Honiara, Solomon Islands. My name is Kristen Rita Aumanu Leong. Today on the show, in Marshall Islands, the former mayor of Bikini Island has rejected corruption allegations made by the United States.
I haven't done anything wrong. That's why the Marshall Island government is not doing anything to me. We have financial CFOs. We have the trust managers. We have the trustees that work with us. I mean, that's why there is nothing happening to me here in the Marshall Islands.
The Miss Pacific Islands pageant is underway in Fiji, and here in Honiara, well, magic school buses. Those stories and more coming up. Thank you, Tomas. Thank you, and Vinaka, for tuning in to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia, yours in the Pacific. But first, a ship and its crew, which was intercepted 2 weeks ago, carrying almost 5 tons of cocaine near French Polynesia, is now headed to Sydney. They were allowed to leave after the drugs were dumped into the Pacific Ocean. Australian authorities are staying tight-lipped about whether they're planning to take any action of their own. Lucy Cooper reports.
Making its way to Sydney, the MV Raider and its crew is travelling light after it was intercepted near French Polynesia and the 5 tonnes of cocaine found on board was dumped at sea by French authorities. In a catch and release, the vessel and its crew sailed away unopposed. French Polynesian President Moitai Brotherson says overcrowding in prisons is why the crew couldn't be held there. The country's customs director, Serge Pasetti, said it's an operational realism.
By destroying the drugs immediately, we deliver the harshest blow to the cartels, a direct financial loss. And our priority is to neutralize the drugs to financially strangle criminal organization. No one escaped justice in the long run.
Whether the crew will be investigated and which jurisdiction is responsible isn't straightforward.
Narcotic smuggling is not a universally recognised crime.
Maritime law expert Jennifer Parker says Australia has no jurisdiction to take action.
It wasn't in Australian waters. It's not an Australian flagged vessel. Australian naval members didn't detain them. So you would have to get a pretty high level agreement between the two countries for us to take them and prosecute them. In terms of whether Australia should be tying up our own taxpayer dollars in our own court prosecuting drug smuggling crimes that occur on the high seas, no, I wouldn't think so.
Ms Parker says if the ship was intercepted in international waters, as French authorities say, what happens on board the vessel is the responsibility of the flag state. In this case, West African country, Togo.
It's changed its flag from the US flag to the Togo flag, which is a known flag of convenience. Flags with lower oversight that are often used to hide criminal activities.
That's Noam Rabinovich, the director of product marketing at Winward, a maritime AI company which put the vessel on the radar of authorities before it was intercepted.
The radar had been dormant for a long time, for a couple of years, and then suddenly reappeared in Honduras and then changed its identities. It then changed its pattern of life. It began operating in a way that didn't match its historical profile, like a first-time visit to the Panama Canal. So that change in behavior prompted our Windward system, our AI models, to flag the vessel as risky for smuggling.
A spokesperson for the Australian Federal Police did not provide a comment on the location of MV Raider or whether it is responsible for interception and detainment of its crew, but says that the AFP will continue to work with domestic and international law enforcement partners to bolster our shared future and combat the threat of organised organised crime. Steve Simon, chair of New Zealand's Ministerial Advisory Group on Transnational, Serious and Organised Crime, says recent illicit drug seizures and discovery of narco subs suggest unprecedented amounts are making their way to Australia and New Zealand.
The volume of drugs that are coming through and the profits to be made from them are so high that unless we can reduce the markets in New Zealand and Australia, the demand will result in those drugs coming some way or other through the Pacific.
He thinks Australia could do more.
If I use the analogy of the old game battleships, we can get together our different pieces and try and block out these superhighways for drugs coming down through the Pacific to our countries.
Back in French Polynesia, Serge Pasetti says cooperation is key.
What is most important in sharing information with all the services? We trust between the French customs and the Australian customs are never been higher.
French Polynesia Customs Director Serge Pasetti ending that report from Lucy Cooper. And now to the Marshall Islands, where the former mayor of Bikini Island, Anderson Jibas, has rejected corruption allegations made by the United States government, as Finau Fonua reports.
The statement issued by the U.S. State Department accused Mr. Jibas of allegedly stealing U.S. taxpayer funds meant for victims of nuclear weapons testing and announced that he would be barred from entering the U.S. But he told the ABC the allegations are false and that if they were true, he would have been charged by Marshallese authorities.
I haven't done anything wrong. That's why the Marshall Island government is not doing anything to me. They have been auditing our office. We have financial CFOs. We have the trust managers. We have the trustees that work with us. I mean, that's why there is nothing happening to me here in the Marshall Island.
During his term as mayor of Bikini Island, a $70 million plus U.S.-funded Bikini Resettlement Trust Fund almost went dry. But Mr. Jibas says there isn't any evidence to support the U.S. allegations.
I think it's unfair to the fact that there's no proven allegations or documents on that kind of information to be let out and be spread to the public.
However, Gift Johnson, editor of the Marshall Islands Journal, says an audit of one of the years during Mr. Jibas's term indicates that finances were misused or badly managed.
The Bikini Resettlement Trust Fund, which was used for decades by the Bikini local government to support their community in exile, was wiped out under Mayor Jibas.
Mr. Johnson says further audits are expected this year.
At that point, we'll have a much clearer picture of where, you know, like what happened to money, how it was spent, and what the auditors have to say about it. But what is a fact is the trust fund, the Bikini Resettlement Trust Fund, went from about $70 million down to nothing.
However, Mr. Jibas says he's done no wrong and is hopeful the U.S. State Department will reverse its decision.
We also follow the democracy laws like the U.S., but some people are not happy. And I think what the State Department did is wrong, and we hope that sometime in the near future that can be corrected.
That was former mayor of Bikini Island, Anderson Jibas, speaking there to reporter Finau Fonua. Welcome back to Pacific Beat. I'm Kristen Rita Omanu-Leong here in Honiara. Well, the Miss Pacific Islands pageant is currently underway in Nandi, and by tomorrow night we'll know the winner of the annual Celebration of Culture, Beauty and Leadership. There's been a focus, though, on unity, but questions still linger from last year's controversial competition, which was clouded by allegations of voter fraud. And this year's host, Fiji, has had its own issues over who would represent their country. Well, to help us understand the world of pageantry is ABC's The Pacific TV co-host. No, it's not Johnson Raiola. It's Alice Lolo here, who has been following the Miss Pacific Islands pageant very closely. With that, I say, Malo etaumai pongpong ini, Alice, and thanks for joining us on Pacific Beat.
Oh, Malo lele, Chrissy. Although I do have to say, it would be quite fitting if Johns was covering a pageant, wouldn't you think?
at this stage, I don't think he's thinking of anything pageant related with all the good job he's doing in Papua New Guinea. But we have to do this. Alice, take us through pageants. You know, why are we so fascinated by these pageants?
Yeah, it's quite an odd thing to be fascinated about when you think of the context that we're in today. But, you know, these pageants have been running for a long while, since the 50s. And, you know, this year's Miss Pacific Islands is being held in Fiji, the country which kind of launched, you know, beauty pageants across the Pacific region. But I suppose to Pacific people, you know, these pageants are another form of sport. You know, we love a good competition, particularly when it's against our fellow Pacific peoples. But also, you know, these pageants have become really great platforms and springboards for these young women to find, you know, better and greater opportunities, not just within the region, but, you know, internationally as well. They use these pageants to make such a difference in their own communities. I mean, when we look back to a former Miss Samoa and also former Miss Pacific Islands, Fonui Fafu McFarlane Selmanu, she was a nurse, you know, who used her expertise in the healthcare industry, especially in Samoa during, you know, COVID and lockdowns. You've got Moimoana Schwenke, who's become a UNICEF ambassador, is doing really great things in the Pacific region, particularly around, you know, climate change, advocacy. So, you know, these platforms aren't just, you know, all about beauty, all about the glamour, all about the looks. You know, these platforms really do empower our young Pacific women.
Yeah, absolutely, Alice. And I also do realize that last year Solomon Islands had hosted one of the pageant, Miss Pacific Islands pageant as well. And that's been the mood, or that's been the talk by like small girls who look up to all these beautiful ladies who use that platform for all that you mentioned. But for our listeners who aren't aware, could you give us a breakdown of how many contestants are competing this year and which countries are they representing?
Yes, so it's lucky number 7 this year. We've got the wonderful Miss PNG, Ambella Bobena. We've got a representative from Miss American Samoa, Tofoi Unutua. Miss Samoa, not to be confused, Iringa Noa Feangai Mali Isoti Mapu. We've got Miss Cook Islands, which is really great, who also happens to be a niece of my co-host, Johnson Araela. So that was very interesting to see Petra Martina Mataiti competing. Miss Kiribati as well, Asi Taranatai Rini Marawa. We've got Miss Tonga, the Miss Heilalas Yosi Anatamwe Bao, and of course, Miss Fiji, I love her, Samuels. Now, this particular contestant has been on the lips, on the minds of the Fijians who have been closely watching the pageant. For anyone who didn't get to see the Miss Fiji competition happen towards the end of last year, you know, there was a big controversy when the original winner, Dr. Peggy Ravurasiro, she refused to sign her contract, and she basically said, you know, this contract protected her in no way. And so she wanted to make sure that she was forthcoming with the organizers of the Miss Fiji pageant, and they couldn't come to terms. And so the organization basically got the runner-up, Miss I Love Samuels, to compete in this year's Miss Pacific Island. So there's been a lot of controversy surrounding that. And, you know, we can see in a lot of the commentary happening online, you know, they're still debating about her particular participation in this competition. But to be honest, you know, I've been watching a little bit of it, of what I could, and watching the first category, the pre-pageant interview, now known as the research presentation. And I love her, Samuels. You know, she did a really great job. Her topic was on drugs and crime, and she brought a lot of humanity to a topic that I think is really seen through the lens of, you know, the law and criminal activity. And she's brought a lot of humanity, I think, to this particular subject. So, to be honest, she's actually doing a really great job.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I've seen a lot on the socials about that as well. And I must say, Miss Ailava's costume that she wore for that research or presentation received quite a lot of positives as well from people across the region. But of course, with beauty and glamour comes the controversy, Alice, and the controversy that surrounded last year's competition were the allegations of voter fraud. That was, you know, the head judge Jerry Brandt on the crowning night allegedly tampering with the results. Now, are you aware, you've been covering quite a lot on pageant, are you aware of whether this has been resolved or is this still an ongoing case?
It's currently still an ongoing case. And I think, to be honest, that's the disappointing part about it because, you know, when our young women go into to compete in these competitions, you really want to make sure that they're competing in a fair and equal and honest competition, and you really want to protect them from, you know, the potential harms and issues that could come their way. Now, when this whole issue arose last year, you know, Jerry, of course, addressed the public, and he was very adamant that that there was no wrongdoing. The Miss Pacific Islands organization also released a statement regarding the issue, and they offered an apology, but the entire statement was kind of unclear as to what they were apologizing for, and there was no kind of promise, I suppose, to improve the competition. And when we look at this current competition compared to last year, I think perhaps the only change I can see is is the pre-pageant interview, in which they've now called a research presentation. But, you know, there's so many things they could have implemented, you know, for this year. I mean, one of the things that I saw in the Miss Heilala competition last year was that they implemented some mental health classes for the young women going into the competition. They made sure to sit down and have a talanoa with people, say, for example, like Ofa Gutenbeel from the Women and Children's Crisis Centre in Tonga. So she actually sat down with these young women, made sure that they were okay, made sure that they were feeling safe, mentally safe as well. I thought that was something they could have, you know, potentially implemented into this year's Miss Pacific Islands, particularly around, you know, all the abuse that goes on online. I think, you know, also looking at the Miss Hibiscus pageant in Fiji, some of the contestants were talking about the amount of engagements that these girls have to attend during the pageant, and then having to also prepare themselves physically and mentally for the competition. You know, that amount of engagements is so stressful, having to attend all these things, having to be mentally there as well, and then having to go compete at the end of the evening. It's a lot, you know, to take on. So hopefully they've cut down the amount of engagements. And another thing I thought they should have implemented as well, because this is Miss Pacific Islands, and, you know, English isn't always a strong point for our contestants. I have loved hearing language at these events. I love seeing local girls representing their countries. But I thought, you know, it would be great to implement translators. If English isn't the first strong point for these girls, why not have them present their presentations in their language? You know, there's so many things that get lost in translation. And if their strength is in language, you know, why not give them the option of a translator? So I think there's a lot of things that can be implemented in Miss Pacific Islands. And it's kind of disappointing to see that none of last year's issues were addressed in what we're seeing this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the translation bit that you shared, when you look at the influence of social media as well, Alice, it's become a platform for discussions on beauty, but there's also online bullying there, discrimination. And this is something you did highlight in one of the pieces you did for the Pacific last year. What do you think? Are our pageants too westernized? Like, how can we make it a bit more Pacific? Like, one is, you know, having translators, as you mentioned, but is there anything else that can be done?
Gosh, it's kind of a tough one, yeah, because beauty pageants in general are a Western concept. And so, you know, we've implemented things that do make Pacific. Say, for example, we don't have a bikini section. We've got the sarong category. And, you know, we do see in like traditional wear when these young women, you know, bring out outfits that are made from traditional materials. And there's a lot of storytelling that goes on behind those elements. But I think at the end of the day, the core thing of these competitions, again, it's all a Western concept, and it's all about being judged on your presentation and your beauty. So that's an element we're never going to get rid of, unfortunately. And it's partially an element of fascination for people who watch these pageants as well. But I think, you know, the girls themselves and, you know, the fact that they bring their language and they bring their culture, that's what we do to make it Pacific. That's how we make it Pacific. The way we support these girls, especially, you know, with what we in Tonga like call our mafana, you know, and the community that we bring and surround these girls, that's like an element of our Pacific values that we can bring to these competitions to really make it feel like our own. But yeah, I'll be honest with you, you know, how you mentioned, you know, that the digital space and what people are saying, it's been disappointing already to see that there's negative commentary already going on, and we haven't even begun the official day of you know, the first day of competition. So I'm just hoping all of that dials down, and we remember, you know, our Pacific values and watching these young girls and making sure we support them to the fullest.
Yeah, absolutely, Alice. And speaking of, you know, the actual competition as it begins, tomorrow is the crowning night. What categories are still left to play out? And I have to ask, who do you think will win this year's Miss Pacific Islands pageant? No bias,
Leslie. Tough question. Such a tough question, Chrissy, gosh. Well, today we're actually seeing that the sarong stage interview and talent, and then tomorrow we'll be seeing the traditional wear, which is my absolute favorite traditional wear, and the crowning ceremony. I'm always interested in the storytelling that goes on behind traditional wear, because it's really cool to see, you know, what are the traditional materials? What are some of the indigenous materials, you know, these girls and designers are bringing to these outfits, right? So not that that's going to determine who the winner is, but, you know, I've only managed to catch the pre-pageant interviews, and we've yet to see what's coming up. But I do have to say there have been some standouts for me. Like I really enjoyed Miss Samoa's pre-pageant interview on the topic of bullying, not just for the topic itself, but I love how she incorporated, you know, the cultural elements of Fofola Lefala, which is rolling out the mats in Samoa. One, and, you know, basically giving space to people to sit down on the fala, on the mat, to have a talanoa. And I think she was the only one who incorporated a cultural element like that, you know, to really give an example of what she was going to do, you know, to address the topic. And I think it's really important as well when we come to these topics, you know, looking through them with a cultural lens. You know, because only we as Pacific people know how to, you know, fix and address our issues that are unique to our communities. So I thought that was really interesting. But to be honest, man, we've got a really strong slew of contestants this year. Everyone gave a really strong interview. You know, they had great responses to the questions that were asked of them afterwards. And oh, you know, I'm Tongan, and like I would love to see Miss Tonga take the crown. But to be honest, yeah, it's a really tough one to judge by. And even looking, I mean, of course, I'm going to be looking at their outfits, given that I wear similar outfits on the show. But
I was going to say,
I've you know. What I really appreciate, you know, about this whole competition with beauty, I've actually really loved seeing Miss PNG Iambela Popena. I love the natural beauty look that she's taken. You know, she's wearing her natural curls, barely any makeup, you know, compared to the whole glamour look that the rest of the girls are doing. And to me, like, she stands out because she looks so natural. So not that that's anything to go by, not that I'm saying, you know, who's going to win what, but it's, yeah, these are the kind of standout wins for me, and I'll be watching with great enthusiasm tomorrow's crowning.
Yes, and we all will be watching tomorrow's crowning night, but definitely beautiful moments there, and a time for Pacific Island, you know, our ladies to come together and use that platform. But we wish them all the best. And we still have more categories to go. And as Alice, understand you'll be also getting some outfit inspiration for next month's The Pacific Show when that airs. But we thank you so much for your time.
Malo apito, Chrissy. Have a good day.
Thank you, Thomas. That was ABC The Pacific co-host Alice Lolo here and telling us a little bit more on the world of pageantry.
Nisian Footy Friday. Join Sam and Tini Rao every Friday as they dive into the weekend's footy action and have plenty of laughs along the way. With insights from NRLW powerhouse Sala Tongatuki and Fiji Rugby Union icon Namani Kurundrani, you'll get the inside scoop on Pacifica talent making waves in both rugby league and union. Catch Nisian Footy Fridays at 4pm PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moon Moon Leana, welcome back to Pacific Beat. I'm Kristen Rita Aumanu Leong, coming to you from Honiara. Now, if you are just joining us this morning, a quick recap of our top stories. A ship and its crew, which was intercepted 2 weeks ago, carrying almost 5 tons of cocaine near French Polynesia, is now headed to Sydney after they were allowed to leave after the drugs were dumped into the Pacific Ocean. And in Marshall Islands, the former mayor of Bikini Island, Anderson Jibas, has rejected corruption allegations made by the United States government. So now still to come on the show, there's a new bright delight on the streets of Honiara. Brand new public school buses.
All right, why don't we use these buses instead of having them sit here? Why don't we turn them into school buses? We sprayed them. We said, look, let's make it look like a school bus. So we sprayed it in yellow.
And I'm going to take you on a ride on one of them. That's coming up after news wrap. Time to take a look at what's making headlines across the Moana Pacifica, and we have our producer all the way in Melbourne, Jordan, to join us this morning. Good morning, Jordan. How are you?
Good morning, Chrissy. I'm very well. How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you. And let's get straight into it. First to Fiji, where the country's churches have committed to working with police to battle the drug crisis.
Yeah, that's right, Chrissy. Recently, the Fijian church has formalized this commitment at an event in Suva, where they've pledged to resist shaming people and resist using language that dehumanizes drug users. And they're also working on a strategy for drug prevention in schools and communities. This, of course, comes as the Fiji's government has called the drug crisis there a national emergency, with methamphetamine being the primary drug of concern. And broader than that, even the drug crisis has also sparked a health crisis, as Fiji now has the world's fastest growing HIV epidemic, with needle sharing accelerating across the country because of the drugs. HIV cases there have increased by more than 1,000% between 2019 and 2024. So yes, Fiji's church community has come together to say they're going to work with police to help figure out how to make a way through this crisis.
That's some worrying trend coming out from Fiji. And as you mentioned there, it's from the church, but also a whole round approach to address this. But now to Solomon Islands, as it continues to face corruption challenges. Tell us what's happening following the launch of the Corruption Perception Index.
That's right. So Solomon Islands got a score of 44 out of 100, which is actually 1 point up from last year. But in an interview with Islands Business, Solomon Islands Transparency International Chair Rodney Kingmele says despite this climb, the score still means that Solomon Islands is facing significant corruption challenges. And he says it's a warning with a national election just 2 years away. He's claimed that corruption has seeped into the electoral process, with voters trading ballots for constituency funds and candidates contesting elections, primarily, he says, to access public resources. Now, within the broader Pacific, Solomon Islands, with the corruption index, sort of sits in the middle of the pack. Fiji scored 55, Vanuatu 47, and Papua New Guinea was lagging behind at 26 out of 100. So Solomon Islands there with 44 out of 100. And Chrissy, I wanted to ask, have you seen any response on the ground to this corruption index news in Honiara?
Seen much of it yet. It's also just come out this week, according to local media, and as you mentioned there as well. But a point up is an improvement, and we're hoping that we'll get to see more responses on the ground in the days ahead, or perhaps from next week onwards. But yeah, that'll be from this end.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, it is a positive step forward. But as Transparency International Solomon Islands, Rodney King-Melly says, still challenges to face.
Yes, still more work to be done. But thank you so much, Jordan, for joining us all the way from Melbourne and bringing us all the latest from around the Pacific.
Thanks, Chrissy.
That was Jordan Fennell, our producer in Melbourne. Salelie and welcome back to Pacific Beat. I'm Chris and Rita Aumanu Leong. Well, if you're here in Solomon's capital, Honiara, chances are you may have seen bright yellow magic school buses along the highway. These four buses were used during the 2023 Pacific Games and since then wheeled out only to be used for special events. Now they're back on a trial to pick up kids for school. So how could I resist jumping on board for a ride?
It's 7 a.m. in Honiara's central market, often the busiest time at the city centre, as workers, students and parents rush to board the public buses. Today, it's slightly different.
For me as a parent,
it brings me a peace of mind, and I am happy that there is no longer that experience of struggling to get on a bus. It's a stressful daily experience at the bus stops when I drop off my children or when I have other things going on and I am running late. For my children, they are very happy.
That's Karen Evans, a mom travelling on the school bus with her child. It wasn't only the parents, though, who were fans of the new bus service. So too were the students.
My name is Elena.
And your name?
My name is Polly.
What do you think about this, just having a school bus and being able to get on one this morning?
I think it's better to come for the school bus because it's easy for us. But every morning we fight for the bus to get to school.
Yeah, awesome. And yourself?
The same.
Yeah. You think it's a good thing to be able to have a school bus?
Yes.
You get to school on time?
Yeah, and safe.
In Honiara, public buses are owned by businesses and private individuals. Infrastructure Minister Ricky Fuo says having dedicated bus service run by the city council was something the city clerk wanted.
I asked what the leftover buses were doing, the ones that were left over after the games. And he said that they only use them normally when they have events, such as big meetings, or if the country is hosting a particular group or an event, then they use that bus for logistics, but otherwise it just sits there. And then that's where the whole idea, like, all right, why don't we use these buses instead of having them sit here? Why don't we turn them into school buses? We sprayed them. We said, look, let's make it look like a school bus. So we sprayed it in yellow.
It's unclear how long the trial will go for. In the meantime, students are paying $2 for a ride on the big yellow bus. Minister Fuo says there'll be a study into the trial, and in 2 years' time, students could possibly have free access to the buses.
It's a mission for myself and the ministry is that before, it can be next year, it can be the year after that, but before 2028, we definitely, the kids are going to have free transport to school in the school buses. You know, cost of living is very high at the moment, and so we thought, like, if we could save a parent $10 a day per child, that's $50 per child a week. That's, you know, you times that by 52 weeks in a year, or I mean, school weeks are what, 40? You times that by a year, and then, you know, that's a big chunk of money that the parents are saving where they can spend a bit more on their children.
Rex Konofilia from the Honiara City Council says they're excited about the new service.
What time this will come with them if I decide for
Our committee has decided that the buses will only travel on the main road of Honiara. The routes are from the Central Market, which is the main bus station, to White River and back, and then from the Central Market to Burns Creek.
So how did the yellow buses perform on their first day of service? Well, for parent Karen Evans, she was impressed with the service and happy with the $2 fare.
I agree with the bus fare. It's affordable because some of the public buses we usually get on cost more, even for a short distance. And so with this, we are able to save some money.
That was Honiara mom, Karen Evans, speaking to me there on board the big yellow school bus. How exciting indeed. And on ABC Pacific's Facebook page, you can check out a video of my journey on that bus. And on that post, we also got a lot of comments. So Doreen said, this is such a positive step for Honiara. A school bus service reduces stress for parents and helps families manage work and parenting in a more balanced and positive way. And we also had a comment from Walter saying school buses should have designated bus stops, as public stops can become overcrowded at times. Student safety is a priority. Well, if you are in Honiara, I'd love to hear what you think. So head over to the ABC Pacific page and let me know. Still in Solomon Islands, because here and across the region, it'll be a weekend of celebrating Valentine's Day for some, while others are mixing, baking, frosting, and icing all layers of love you can probably think of. So if you are picking up a cake tomorrow for Valentine's Day, what's your relationship status? Is it joyfully married or happily single? Well, whichever that is, Ilalina Bisili is the co-founder of Cravings, and she's been engaging with her cake customers based on their relationship status. With 60 cake orders in the making, well, I couldn't help but follow the sweet vanilla and cocoa smelling leading to her kitchen. So to really find out what's love got to do with this.
For this year's Valentine cake order theme, we thought of coming up with something fun and interactive for customers here in Honiara. So we saw similar content creation overseas, and we thought to bring it as our menu for this year for Valentine's. So basically, it's the cake orders is based on what your relationship status is. So we thought, like, this idea, it would be really fun for customers. So basically, customers, we had cakes for each relationship status, because for Valentine's Day, it's common for Valentine's to be just only for couples. But I've noticed that everyone has a relationship status, whether you're happily single, broken-hearted, joyfully married, or still things are still complicated. So we wanted cake to we wanted for everyone to be able to order a cake for themselves based on their relationship status. Well, for our menu, we had, for example, a cake that describes the nature of the relationship. Black Forest is something classic, something that everyone loves. So that's based on you being joyfully married. And as for if you're in love, we have a cake option for you, which is red velvet, because everything is based on the theme of Valentine's, red with red hearts on the cake. So yeah, that's the cake options that we have for Valentine's this month. And I've noticed that with having that idea, we posted it up on Monday, and I tried to test the waters. Our customers are gonna order these cakes from us, and then just instantly like that, we had orders coming in through our Facebook messages. We had people commenting under the Facebook advertisements. It's been very interactive. I've had customers asking me, oh, is this flavor good? Because I'm currently single, but I'm also in love. And then I advised them. I said, oh, well, it's based on whatever cake you really love. So you just choose between the two. With our Valentine's Valentine's prep, we have started a week ago. So as you can see, all of us are busy preparing for Saturday, which is the day that everyone will come and pick up your orders.
Just with regards to the cakes that you described and relationship status, is this common these days for Solomon Islands, or particularly here in Honiara, for people to celebrate Valentine's with the cake?
What we've had for the past years We've had massive amount of customers ordering Valentine's cakes from us. But then I think for this year, we've had more than we've catered for in the past years. Now this year, we are catering, we're offering cakes. I think customers, we've had about 60 customers wanting to order our bento cakes. So bento cakes are basically a 6-inch small cake where, as I mentioned, two people will be able to share. So Valentine's is another event in the year where we have a lot of customers ordering cakes from us compared to Christmas. Yeah, so we have, it's very common here in the Solomon Islands where everyone wants to celebrate Valentine's as well.
And so which has been the favorite so far?
I must say that the most favorite and is Black Forest. So Black Forest is joyfully married. And the second to that flavor is Red Velvet. Almost everyone is in love.
Oh. Well, Valentine's Day is pretty much everything layered with love, I suppose. And you mentioned there were some that messaged and were asking you which one they actually, which category they fall in. Is there an option where they can go halves?
I should offer that option. There was one customer who jokingly stated, "I want all of the above."
Which means everybody perhaps is in love.
Yes, everyone is in love this Valentine's. So you'll see a lot of people going out to celebrate the union or the relationship here in Honiara.
And how special is this for you as a baker to just be able to whip up something? And what's the best possible way to devour a cake?
Take out the cake on a nice, maybe if you're having a Valentine's theme set dinner setting, maybe candle lights, a few rose petals on the side, and then just you and your partner, or even your family, just sharing cake with each other, cutting a slice and sharing the piece with everyone that means so much to you, the ones that you share love with.
Ilalina Bisili, co-founder of Craving, speaking to me there. Well, what's your special plan this weekend? I hope it's a special one for you and your loved ones. Welcome back to Pacific Beat. I'm Chris and Rita Aumanu-Leong in Honiara. Time for sport. The new Super Rugby Pacific season kicks off in Dunedin in Sydney this evening before switching to Churchill Park, Lautoka tomorrow afternoon when the Fijian Drua will take on Moana Pacifica in the Battle of the Pacific. 2026 will be a crucial year for both sides, with Moana adapting to life without superstar Adi Savea, while the Drua will be under pressure to raise their game to reflect the Fijian Union's rise to Tier 1 status. But the New Zealand Herald's rugby analyst, Gregor Paul, says the Drua have one very obvious problem: how to win a match outside of Fiji. While for Moana, the absence of the Adi factor just cannot be ignored.
So Adi put the team on his shoulders last year, and he dragged them through tough situations. He inspired them. He elevated them. He probably produced the single greatest Super Rugby campaign we've ever seen by one individual. And he's a pretty special player at that. So that's not available to them in this campaign. So clearly, they're going to be disadvantaged by that. But I guess if you're Moana, you're hoping that some of what he brought last year in terms of improving training cultures, habits, instilling better discipline on and off the field, setting the team up to succeed, they'll be hoping that some of that stuck to a young, inexperienced team that didn't have a lot of professional experience. But they're clearly not quite the same team without him.
But if Moana are hoping for a miracle, they've got one. He's the new captain, Miracle Faialangi. I mean, it's a big task for a relatively inexperienced player to take on.
Yeah, love your pun. Yeah, look, he's a good player, though. And I think that's to the point I was making previously. There is an opportunity for a number of guys, Miracle being the most obvious, to fill the vacuum in terms of leadership, ability on the field, driving the club off the field. There's an opportunity for some young-ish guys who don't have a lot of experience to follow in Ardi's footsteps and take his lead. Like, he's been a player with considerable potential. We all know that. He's had some pretty good games. But I don't think he's slung together a campaign yet that we've all looked at and gone, wow, this guy is an international player. He can go onto the world stage and light up next year's World Cup. I think that's his chance to do it, be inspirational, and drag a few players along with him.
What about the question of where Moana play their home games? My understanding is that they've virtually been told you will only play so many in Auckland, and they're heading off to Tonga this year. I mean, they've said they want to play in Tonga and Samoa, but I'm wondering whether they're doing that willingly or not.
Look, it's been a challenge from day one, finding a home for Moana. There's a difficulty here in Auckland. It's a crowded sports market, not by Australian standards, possibly, not by Melbourne standards, certainly, but it's a crowded market sporting-wise. Certainly the Blues welcomed the concept of Moana, but didn't really like the idea of having a Pacific club plonked on their doorstep, partly because the Blues see themselves very much as a Pacifica club. So that's been a perennial issue, that there's been tension placed on them around, can they build a fan base in Auckland? And the pressure is on them, and it's been exerted by not just the Blues, but the Chiefs in Hamilton, which is really just down the road here from Auckland. They're not super keen because effectively Moana in South Auckland are on the Chiefs' doorstep as well. So it's been a battle. No one's got an answer yet for where they can play and where they can be established as a regular entity. And unless they can come up with solutions, it is going to be exceptionally challenging for them to have a viable future.
And looking to the Andrea, they finished second bottom last season. Their points differential was the worst in the entire competition. I think it's fair to say it was a disappointing year for them. But now Fiji Rugby has been given Tier 1 status at international level. The Drua have to lift their game, don't they? If for no other reason than a lot of their players are ending up playing for the Flying Fijians.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Their campaign last year was definitely disappointing, particularly after how they played in 2024. They made the playoffs. They probably could have finished even higher up the table that year. And it felt to me like they were going to build on that, and they didn't. They went backwards. Perennial issue that they are one team at home and a completely different one when they get on the road. And that's an issue that they need to solve, because professional rugby demands that you can't be this Jekyll and Hyde type entity. You've got to learn discipline. You've got to learn the ability to play away from home, keep the same routines, keep the same patterns, deliver the same type of performance. So that's something that they need to fix, and they need to do it this year. And yet, you're right, they've got what they've always craved, which is a seat at the top table through the Nations Championship. A considerable number of the Flying Fijians are likely to come out of Super Rugby. I know there's plenty of guys in Europe that they'll be picking from as well. But it's a critical moment here for Fiji, because the invitation's been extended. Everyone has pumped them up and said, look, these guys, if they just get the opportunity, they will deliver on the world stage. They just need the chance. Well, they've got the chance, and now they need to deliver.
Gregor Paul, rugby analyst with the New Zealand Herald, talking to Richard Ewart. And if you're looking for a tip for the big game, well, Moana were comfortable winners in Auckland last season by 19 points. And Gregor believes they might just do it again in Lautoka.
Disasters are inevitable, but losing your life or home isn't. Learn what to do before, during, and after disaster in a program aimed at helping you keep safe. Pacific Prepared is all things disaster preparedness for the Pacific, with a team of reporters on the ground, having conversations, and bringing you the stories that could help you, your family, and community prepare for natural disasters. Pacific Prepared, Fridays from 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
And that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat. Time to take a look back at our main stories today. Former mayor of Bikini Island in the Marshall Islands, Anderson Jibas, has rebuked allegations of corruption by the U.S. State Department.
I haven't done anything wrong. That's why the Marshall Island government is not doing anything to me. We have financial CFOs. We have the trust managers. We have the trustees that work with us. I mean, that's why there is nothing happening to me here in the Marshall Islands.
Thanks for your company this morning. Aggie Tupou will be back next week at 6 a.m. PNG time. You can also hear us again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. Until then, I'm Kristen Rita Aumanu-Leong. Have a wonderful day.